Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 32, text number 22, is that right?
Yes.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Ajasva paramishtinam.
Ajasva paramishtinam.
Tadgunasraya bhaktya. Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Bhajasva paramishtinam.
Bhajasva paramishtinam.
Tadgunashraya bhaktya.
Tadgunashraya bhaktya.
Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Tasmat tvam sarva bhavena.
Bhajasva paramishtinam.
Bhajasva paramishtinam.
Tadgunasraya bhaktya.
Tadgunasraya bhaktya.
Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Bhajaniya padam bhujam.
Tasmat.
Tasmat.
Therefore.
Therefore.
Tvam.
You,
Devahuti,
Sarvabhavena,
with loving ecstasy,
Bhajasva,
worship, Paramaishtinam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Tatguna,
the qualities of the Lord.
Asraya,
connected with
bhaktya,
by devotional service,
bhajaniya,
worshipable,
pada
ambujam,
whose lotus feet,
my dear mother, I therefore advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For his lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love. For thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. Purport. The word parameshtinam is sometimes used in connection with Brahma. Parameshti means the Supreme Person. As Brahma is the Supreme Person within this universe, Krishna is the Supreme Personality in the spiritual world. Lord Kapila Dev advises his mother that she should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, because it is worthwhile. Taking shelter of demigods, even those in the highest positions like Brahma and Shiva, is not advised herein. One should take shelter of the Supreme Godhead. Sarva Bhavena means in all loving ecstasy. Bhava is the preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 8. One who has attained the stage of bhava can accept the lotus feet of Lord Krishna as worshipable. This is also advised here by Lord Kapila to his mother. Also significant in this verse is the phrase tad guna srayaya bhaktya. This means that discharging devotional service under Krishna is transcendental. It is not material activity. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Those who engage in devotional service are accepted to be situated in the spiritual kingdom. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 26. They at once become situated in the transcendental kingdom. Devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the only means for attaining the highest perfection of life for the human being. This is recommended herein by Lord Kapila to his mother. Bhakti is therefore nirguna, free from all tinges of material qualities. Although the discharge of devotional service appears to be like material activities, it is never saguna or contaminated by material qualities. Tad guna sraya means that Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so sublime that there is no need to divert one's attention to any other activities. His behavior with the devotees is so exalted that a devotee need not try to divert his attention to any other worship. It is said that the demoniac Putana came to kill Krishna by poisoning him. But because Krishna was pleased to suck her breast, she was given the same position as his mother. Devotees pray, therefore, that if a demon who wanted to kill Krishna gets such an exalted position, why should they go to anyone other than Krishna for their worshipful attachment? There are two kinds of religious activities, one for material advancement and the other for spiritual advancement. By taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity, material and spiritual. Why then should one go to any demigod? Right. Om Magyana Timirandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukkam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. We are recommended here to take shelter of Krishna. And as Prabhupada says at the end, not the demigods. Not the demigods. In the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada mentions that this term, Parameshti, is sometimes used to refer to Brahma. But in this case, it refers to Krishna. It means the highest personality, the topmost personality. And the topmost personality in the creation is Lord Brahma. But in this particular case, it is not referring to Lord Brahma. It's referring to Krishna. One should take shelter of the Supreme Godhead. How? How should one take shelter of the Supreme Godhead? It's recommended here. Sarva Bharvena, with loving ecstasy. Loving ecstasy. Bhava. Sarva Bhava. All bhav. Bhava sometimes refers to the mood or the mood, the emotion. Bhava. Bhava bhakti. The mood is bhaktya, with bhakti. Bhava is the mood of bhakti. Prabhupada says here, bhava is the preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. The stage of bhava means, not practically speaking, one is a pure devotee. Sarva Bhavena. And Prabhupada quotes this line from Bhagavad Gita 10:8. Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. And before that, Bhajante Mam. Worship me, Buddha. Bhava samamvitaha, with great attention. Right? Bhava samamvitaha. So in this case, bhava is described as being focused only on Krishna. And of course, this is the point Prabhupada is making. Focus on Krishna, there's no need to focus on any of the demigods. Right? Which wasn't a problem for Prabhupada in the beginning of his preaching in the West. He was a guru. He told everybody to worship Krishna. No, nobody had heard of Rama or Shiva, practically speaking, before they met Srila Prabhupada. So when Prabhupada said, worship Krishna, they just said, okay. Not necessarily how, right? Okay, how? But rather, the devotees naturally followed their leader. And Prabhupada didn't have a problem with having to explain to the devotees why they shouldn't worship the demigods. Right? The devotees just accepted Srila Prabhupada's authority, his instructions, as being he was the guru. Not only that he was the guru, he was their inspiration, their life, their guide, their encouragement, and They just naturally followed Prabhupada because of his inspiration and his exemplary behavior, his example. But of course, in preaching to the Indian diaspora, it's another. Just like, you know, we have temples coming up in Melbourne now, right? And we've got Lord Shiva, we've got Durga, we've got Ganesh, we've got Radha and Krishna, we've probably got Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Kartikeya. Yeah, at least we know it. And so it's, in one sense, they're kind of hedging their bets. Right? We'll worship this one, that one, and the other. We'll make sure that we're covering everybody. Huh? But here in the Bhagavatam, and this is why it's difficult in one sense for us to preach, because in the psyche of some, there's this propensity to honour and worship everybody, and which is in one sense not a bad thing, because we're supposed to be respectful to all, right? And even there's the story of Burijan Prabhu preaching in Hong Kong to the Indian community there, and in My Glorious Master, he explains how he was telling Prabhupada how difficult it was to preach there, because everybody was worshipping the demigods. And then Prabhupada said, and you don't discourage them from worshipping the demigods, do you? Right? Because it's very easy for the devotees to become very fanatical. Right? And say, yes, you should only worship Krishna. Right? But even Krishna recommends one shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but one should engage them in acts of devotion. Right? So disturbing people too much about don't worship the demigods, right? One has to be careful in this presentation. We should certainly be respectful, but at the same time, we have to educate people as to who is the Parameshtinam. For those who don't know anything about devotional service or devotional practice, who have no culture, in one sense, that is the only culture, is the culture of devotion. It's easy to explain, but when we're preaching to, or we're explaining things to an audience where the natural respect, awe and reverence for the demigods is part of the culture, we have to be careful, right? Because we'll upset people. We tell them, oh, no, you don't have to worship these fellows. Right? But here, bhava samamvitaha means Buddha bhava samamvitaha. Those who are wise, right? Those who are wise, focus. The bhava is focus on devotional service and nothing else. Only Krishna. And here Prabhupada says, not the demigods. Most people approach the demigods, why? Why do people approach the demigods usually? Huh?
Sense gratification.
Immediate result. Yes. Huh?
Immediate result.
Immediate result. Yeah. Gimme. What? Gimme. Do you know what gimme means?
Easily pleased.
The demigods are easily pleased? Maybe.
Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva, yep. Also, if you worship Krishna, then you may find life gets difficult. Right? We want life to be easy. But if you worship Krishna, there's all sorts of things that you have to do. Right? And even the devotees struggle with this diversion. You know, Maya has diversionary tactics. Papa says it's when you become a devotee, then Maya makes all effort to distract you from devotional service. And it's like warfare. Right? It's that serious. If we don't stick to Krishna, then we may be a victim of that. We may be a casualty of that battle. So even if the devotees, there are distractions in the form of material allurements. Which is why people worship the demigods. In the Shastra, there's so much encouragement to worship the demigods in order to achieve the heavenly planets, to achieve a life of longevity, of material opulence, of material enjoyment. And so that's attractive. And as Krishna points out, there are those who are bewildered by these statements of the Vedas and who become distracted by those attractive features. But of course, Krishna warns in the Bhagavad Gita that even those heavenly attractions have their limitations, because they still remain in the material world. And remaining in the material world means eventually one has to succumb to the process of the recycling process, right? We're into recycling these days. People are into recycling. Well, that's what's going to happen. And so even these phantasmagorical pleasures, the facilities of the demigods, are limited and temporary. So the devotees, understanding the limited and temporary nature, even of the heavenly planets, don't or shouldn't be attracted by these material facilities. And it's interesting what Prabhupada says here, if we go on. So the focus should be, iti matva, thus, knowing that Krishna is the source of everything. Mata saravam pravartate, iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. One focuses on Krishna alone, purely. But then, Prabhupada makes this very interesting point here at the end, that there are two types of religiosity, right? There's the give me. There's a recognition of the supremacy of the demigods, or the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Parameshtinam. And people come to the temple, right, and they pray. Let me be successful. They put their $2 in the hundi and they pray to Krishna, please give me $1,000,000. You know, I've given you so much, $2, great, at great sacrifice to myself. Now please bless me. Right, so there's that kind of mood. But then there's another mood, that the devotee comes before Krishna and they put $2 in the hundi, but that's more or less symbolic of giving themselves. And so the devotee comes before Krishna and says, I am yours. Whatever I have has come from, it belongs to you. Right? And so I want to be engaged in your service. Whatever you want, please don't let me be distracted by the material energy. Please don't let me be bewildered, and let me just do service to you. This is yours. So that, you know, the giving of the donation is just symbolic of wanting to give everything to Krishna. Actually, we don't give it. It already belongs to Krishna. That is the understanding of a devotee. Devotee understands that actually, I belong to Krishna. This is not even, you know, it's a false sense of proprietorship to think that this is mine. Of course, it is, as it's explained in Prabhupada explains in the Upanishad, that the body is given to us as our quota. And so in that sense, yes, it does belong to us. But it's just like a house that we've rented from the landlord. We're able to use it, so long as we fulfill the requirements of the lease, we're able to use it. But at some point in time, the landlord's going to say, okay, I need the house. So at some point in time, this body will be, just as it's given to us, and we don't quite know where it came from, it'll also be taken away. So the mood, the bhava, if you like, of the devotee is not so much one of renunciation, because what are we renouncing? We can't renounce something that we don't own, Prabhupada explains, right? You know, the man comes, Prabhupada gives the example of the pauper coming to the bank manager and saying, I renounce the bank. Right? You didn't own a bank in the first place. There are two types of worship, Prabhupada says. One that's for material benefits, the other is for spiritual advancement. Devotees understand that everything ultimately belongs to Krishna. That even the material energy, when used in Krishna's service, is not material anymore. But it's actually spiritual. The behavior of the devotees is not material. It might look the same as the materialistic people. As Prabhupada says, we're singing and dancing and feasting, and they're also singing, dancing and feasting. But the behavior of the devotees compared to the behavior of the materialist is worlds apart. Same activity, but there's that bhava, that mood of not so much offering everything to Krishna, but understanding that it belongs to Krishna in the first place. And so it's a proper utilization of everything to use it in Krishna's service. And that one won't be the loser. You know, there's this notion that one will be a loser if one gives to Krishna. But it belongs to Krishna anyway. So that's the proper use of a thing, is for it to be engaged in Krishna's service. That's the mood. Buddha bhava samanvitaha. So therefore there's attention to detail. The bhava is attention to detail. A devotee doesn't like to see Krishna's temple dirty. No? Can't see things in disorder or disarray. If something's worth doing and we're doing it for Krishna, then we do it properly with the proper focus and attention. So even though the activities of the devotees appear to be the same as the materialists, they're not. The mood, the focus, the cynosure is on Krishna and Krishna's pleasure, or on the devotees and the devotees' pleasure. Everything is done with a focus on what pleases the devotees and ultimately what pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what pleases Krishna. So Prabhupada says here that even in worshipping Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity. Right? We think that we're going to be the loser, but actually Prabhupada's explaining here, if you take shelter of Krishna, then you'll be the winner materially and spiritually. Well, devotees will actually be looked after. We live in Albert Park. Who wouldn't like to live in Albert Park? Well, people pay millions of dollars to live in houses around here. Right? Kachalyananda? Huh? You have to be wealthy to live in Albert Park. In fact, you know, we know the devotees will buy a house in Point Cook, right? They get the first homeowner's loan, right? Then after a year, they'll rent it out, then they'll come back to Albert Park and live in an apartment here, right? Why? Why do they do that? Why do they put themselves at such inconvenience?
Because the temple is here.
Yeah. If the temple's here, what is here? Huh? Yeah, Radha Vallabha. Huh?
Radha Vallabha and his devotees.
Yeah, even Vishwarupa went to Pune. Huh? Now we're trying to convince his wife and the kids to come back. Huh? He went away too. Came back. So why do they come here?
Feels like home.
Feels like home. That's right. It is. It's home. Why would you go anywhere else? Huh? Very unfortunate if you had to leave Melbourne. Even Philip realised that when he went to Germany. He said to me yesterday, "Don't let me go back to Germany ever again." And even his father, when he was driving him to the airport, he said, "You should go and live in another country. Germany's no good." Huh? Even his father had a realisation that devotional service is good for his son. Right? But you know, the activities look the same, and sometimes we mistake devotional service for material activities. And so we begrudge it. You know, we think, "Oh no, do I have to do this? Why is it so hard? Why is life so hard?" Huh? But if we appreciate that austerity is actually to help us make progress and to be more detached and to be more focused on Krishna, and we understand actually it's an impetus to make spiritual progress, spiritual advancement. And if Krishna wants to give me, then I'll accept. But if he wants to take it away, then I accept that he takes it away also. Because that doesn't mean we should be whimsical about what we're doing and just, I wasn't meant to, you know. Sometimes we can become even whimsical about our efforts in devotional service. And actually, we saw Srila Prabhupada wasn't like that. Makes the point in that new movie. In the trailer, you see Prabhupada. Whenever there was difficulty, then Prabhupada would fight harder. Right? He wouldn't give up easily. He would fight even harder. Sometimes the devotees are thinking, "Why is Prabhupada doing this? It's impossible." Just like in Juhu, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and was it Giriraj Maharaj, they gave away the property, practically speaking, after they just realised this is hopeless, we'll never win. Prabhupada was furious. Furious. And kept on fighting, and the devotees couldn't understand, why is he doing this? Because when you go to Juhu now, right, in those days it was a jungle and it just didn't make sense. But when you go to Juhu now and you see the temple and the facility there and the thousands of people that come to worship, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands on Janmashtami, they come to worship Radharasa Bihari, then you realise why Prabhupada fought so hard, right? Even Vrindavan. Devotees had to struggle so hard to build the temple. And Gurudas went to Prabhupada and said, you know, all I can think about is cement and steel and bricks and mortar, right? As if it's a material activity. And what did Prabhupada say? What do you think Arjuna was thinking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Right? He wasn't just sitting down chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Right? He was, kill this one, kill that one. Right? Right? And that's devotional service. That's amazing, isn't it? Where you can go out and kill people. Well, probably shouldn't, no. But so what it means is that anything can be engaged in Krishna's service. And when it is engaged in Krishna's service, then it is not a material activity. It is a purely spiritual activity. Understanding what Krishna's plan is, right? Prabhupada explains how the battle of Kurukshetra was part of Krishna's plan. Right? Part of Krishna's plan. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. So Krishna has two projects, if you like. There's many projects, but purpose, plans. And one is to remove the demons. The other is, or the first, is to protect paritranaya sadunam, to protect the devotees. And Prabhupada gives the example. It's like, he gets this example, I think, from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that if you want to plant a field of rice, right, if you want to get a crop of rice, the first thing you have to do is go in and dig up all the weeds, right? Pull out all the weeds. So first, there's destruction, right? Then there's rejuvenation. So we understand that this, and this is a process that's going on all the time. So even though it looks that, you know, that there's so many people were killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, and so people might say, oh, this is horrible, right? Actually, Prabhupada mentions that the Sahajas don't read the Bhagavad Gita. They want to go to the Rasa Leela, Krishna's loving pastimes, not the fighting. But in order to remove the unwanted, you know, removing the unwanted so he could establish the pious kings meant having to destroy the miscreants. Vinashaya chaduskritam. That's part of Krishna's plan. And even though it is apparently ghastly or gruesome, still it's still Krishna's leela. There's that connection to Krishna. And when there's that connection to Krishna, then those activities are not material. Our activities are not material. When we keep that focus, that bhava, that mood of attention to detail for Krishna's pleasure, attention to the fact that our activities should be not diverted to material pursuits, but that our activities should be focused on pleasing Krishna only. Which makes bhakti or devotional service wonderful and mysterious and attractive also, because it means that And it means that we can do anything for Krishna. Right? So what? Ordinarily, as a householder, that's considered entangling. Going to work, getting a job, buying a house, putting money in the bank, paying off the mortgage, all of these activities people are doing, right? But those activities we can do, but we do it for Krishna's pleasure, and that becomes purifying. We're doing the same activities as everybody else, right? We're doing the same things. But we purify our activities by chanting Hare Krishna, right? And we're praying to Krishna, please engage me in your service. Please put me under your shelter. What is it here? Tad gunasrayaya. Bhaktya, with devotion, right? Let me take shelter of you, and so let me dedicate my activities. So we're doing the same things as the... as we're buying houses in Point Cook. Right? Is that right? Nandamandi? Yeah? We're buying houses in Albert Park. Right? I'm worrying about who's going to buy these houses next door. Right? I don't have any money, but if I had some money, I would buy it for Krishna. So we're worrying about these things, but we're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, ultimately. Right? And because we're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, then it's okay to have that material prosperity. It's fine. Because the devotee understands, what is it? Idam Krishna, idam nama ma. I'm doing it for Krishna, I'm not doing it for myself. Or, okay, we may have that propensity, I'm not so renounced. But if I try to do everything for Krishna's pleasure because the connection with Krishna is there, then those activities are not of the material world, they're of the spiritual world. Is it that? And that's amazing. That's the power and the potency of bhakti, of devotional service. And that's what Prabhupada taught us. This is what we should do. And that will prosper. We will prosper. We'll prosper spiritually. We see the devotees very happy, very enlivened, knowledgeable, right? Learned. They show the qualities of a Vaishnava, and they're also materially prosperous. It's interesting, isn't it? Sudama tried to show was proud somewhat, right, of his renunciation. He didn't have anything. And then he went and gave his very small offering to Krishna. Then when he came home, opulence, like anything. It's more opulent to be learned and detached, in one sense, because the param drishtva nivartate, the pleasure derived from serving Krishna is so satisfying that a devotee is not interested in material pursuits. But at the same time, that pleasure or that satisfaction derived from devotional service, and one offers whatever one has, understanding that it actually doesn't belong to me anyway, is a symptom of advancement in a devotee. But there's nothing wrong with having material facilities and being a devotee. And Krishna says here, that's a natural consequence of performing devotional service. Yeah? By taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity, material and spiritual. Why then should one go to any demigod? No? When we connect things to Krishna, when we connect ourselves to Krishna, then we become happy and satisfied both materially and spiritually. That's the idea. Of course, one has to be careful about material opulence, material prosperity, because it has its own bewildering potency. Right? So we do have to be careful. But so long as we're maintaining that bhava, that mood of everything's for Krishna and it's not mine, right, then one can overcome the bewildering potency of the material energy. When one is free from that bewilderment, then Krishna gives more. Right? And just like I mentioned many times, you know, Prabhupada's, there's the picture of the Mayavadi sannyasi. When he's given money, his hand just... Prabhupada says, no, you know, give it to me. Right? Give it to me. I'll look after it for you. Right? Because he's understanding it belongs to Krishna. I'm looking after this for Krishna. It's not mine. Right? And that's why we like to come together. We like to come together. And there's a taste. There's a taste. There's this bhava that we experience when we come to the temple. Right? That we want more and more and more of. Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna himself, became a devotee to experience that taste of serving Krishna. That taste of service to Krishna is so attractive that even Krishna's thinking, what is it that Radharani sees in me? What is she experiencing? What is she experiencing that I'm not? There's something I'm missing out on something here. Huh? And so he comes as Lord Chaitanya to experience that mood of service, that bhava, bhava bhakti. And so when we're engaged in those activities, as Prabhupada mentions here, they're not material activities. When we offer everything to Krishna, it's not material activities. But we, and as Prabhupada said, you know, this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan. Because that's the mood of Vrindavan, where Krishna is the center and everybody performs their activities for Krishna's pleasure and derive great satisfaction and encouragement, enthusiasm from rendering service. They want to engage everybody. We want to bring everybody to the temple and engage them in Krishna's service, because there's no higher taste. And we know it. People come here. People come to the temple and then they say, I haven't... There's something special about this place. What? I rang up. We're looking for the... Actually, a couple of interesting things happened to me over the last few days. I might share with you now. I rang up. We were looking for the company that... Who's been at the St. Kilda Festival as a volunteer? Huh? You know, you have to fill out that online thing, right? So we're looking for the company that does that, because we want to have online induction for the kitchen and child protection and you know, just basic things that we do here. So we got in touch with the council and said, who's that company that provides you with that software? And they gave us the name of the people. They're just in Port Melbourne. Huh? It's called Lucidity. That's the name of the software. So I rang up the lady, I rang up the company and I got to speak to one of the ladies. And she said, oh, how did you find out about us? Right? And I told her that I'm from the Hare Krishna temple. We're just down the road from you. And then she said, oh, I know. You work with the council. I said, yeah, well, that's how we found out. And then she said, you know, I told her how we'd completed the kitchen. And she said, I walk past the temple every day. And she says, it smells so good. I said, it smells even better now, the kitchen. We've got a new kitchen. So, anyway, so she had a, you know, she had a an experience of the temple, and she's attracted. Right? In fact, I was walking with a, not, I came out of my house and was walking to the temple, and as I was walking out, there was a lady walking her dog, right? And I said, oh, two dogs actually, and I said to her, you know, they behave, are the boys behaving themselves? And then she started, she said, when do you have your kirtan? And then when's, you know, when's prasadam, basically? What time's prasadam? And I said, well, 9 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 6 o'clock. And so she walks past the temple every, she's walking her dogs and walks past the temple every day. She said, oh, I should pop in, I should come. So the other day when I was giving class, I noticed she came and she opened up the door and she looked in the temple room and she came for breakfast. So anyway, these are, people are attracted to the, you know, to devotion, to devotional service. They're naturally attracted to it. And another experience that I had, I go and I do a little puja every day to my pictures at home, and in the where we're living now, we've got more flowers around the place, right? And especially down at the you know, that hairdresser on the end of Kerford Road, in their garden there, they've got these big lavender bushes, right? And they got lavender flowers that are about this big, huge things. And so I go over there pretty much every morning when I don't have any flowers in the garden at home. I go over there and pick the lavender. And I keep on thinking, I wonder what's going to happen if the people who own this place, you know, catch me pinching flowers. Because they're on the footpath. It's not. So I think like this every time I go over there. And I'm careful. I keep an eye on the, see who's inside, or if anybody's there. It's only open 3 days a week. So anyway, there's a fellow over the road who's been watching me. And so yesterday I went and got the flowers, and he came out of his house and he said, "Hey, hey!" And he came over the road, and I said, "Watch out! There's a car coming." He was enthusiastic to come over and talk to me. So anyway, he came over and he said, "Here, look in my garden. I've got lavender bushes there. You can have any you like from my garden." So I thought, "Oh, that's interesting." I thought he was going to get on my case for taking flowers. He said, "No, come over to my garden and take some flowers." So I thought, that's pretty far out. So he wants to be engaged in service. So it's not a, you know, what we do is not material. It's not material activity. It's spiritual. And, you know, if we're doing everything, anything really for Krishna, well, within the rules and regulations, obviously. Right? And we see here, you know, Arjuna's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and he's killing people, right? And that's pleasing to Krishna. Right? This is such a challenging concept. We think, oh, non-violence, ahimsa, right? But Krishna doesn't say, no, non-violence, ahimsa. He says, get out there and kill them, right? In the right context, in the right circumstance. Right? So that anything we do, if it's spiritualized and it's connected to Krishna, then it is not a material activity. Right? Not a material activity. Because we've got to make sure that we're chanting Hare Krishna, that we're worshipping the deity, you know, that we're following our sadhana, and that our focus, our motives are pure. But when, and that's why the sadhana is there, so that we get to that stage of bhava bhakti, right? Adol Sraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, which is removing the unwanted things. We already know that's what we're supposed to do, so we shouldn't be surprised, right? Ramdrishtva. We're focused then on Krishna's service, whatever we do. Then it's it's steady, nishta. Then ruchi, will get a taste from that activity, that taste that we're, you know, anandam buddhi vajanam pratipadam purnam amritas vajanam. We want that taste of, that comes from chanting Hare Krishna, that taste from engaging in Krishna's service. So we then get to the point of bhava. That's our goal, bhava bhakti, which means not on the bodily concept of life, purely on the transcendental platform. Bhava bhakti means we understand fully that I'm not this body. Fully. I'm not the mind. I'm not the senses. I'm not the proprietor even. That I'm Krishna's. That's the bhava that we want to be always situated in. You know, on that platform, then we're going to just float through problems. Right? On the material platform, everything's a struggle. Oh, why is it so hard? Right? But when we're chanting Hare Krishna and enlivened by our bhakti, by our devotional service and our offerings to Krishna, then even if life is difficult, it's not difficult, right? It's just life is ups and downs. We automatically become tolerant of the comings and goings of material existence when we're chanting Hare Krishna and offering everything to Krishna and not being diverted by the material energy. What Prabhupada says here, gee, just amazing what Prabhupada mentions in this purport from the other day, right? He says that everyone is addicted to hearing of the activity of another person, right? We have to read The Age, the ABC, the New York Times. We have to find out what's going on around the place. Right? But Prabhupada says here, he says, the message of the Lord's activities is nectar. So, you know, when we're performing devotional service and everything is nectar, right? And besides that message, any information in which we may be interested is actually hellish. Right? But we're still attracted to the hellish and we find Krishna's activities hard. Huh? Which is not the right kind of bhava that we should be in. But with the right bhava and the mood of service to Krishna, then the activities of the material world are seen for what they are, hellish, and the activities of Krishna consciousness are nectar. That's where we want to go. Okay, anybody have any comments or questions?
Why is Maya especially putting efforts to distract the devotees?
Why?
Yeah.
It's a test, right? It's a test. If you want to get a degree, right, or any major qualification, it's not just enough to go to all of the classes, right? But you also have to sit the exam, right? Sit the tests, right? So our, in order to be qualified to enter the spiritual world, one has to be pure, right? Unalloyed, which means only focused on Krishna. So Krishna will ensure through his agency, Maya, that we only have pure motives for serving Krishna and no motives for serving Maya. And so, therefore, Maya tests us. What about this? Woo! Right? Then we go for it. Then Maya goes, wrong answer. Right? Not ready for the spiritual world yet. Right? And we think, oh, why not? We're not qualified. Right? Not qualified. And so Maya shows us our disqualifications and we say, it's not fair. Right? But actually it is fair. It's to teach us the proper mood of bhakti, the proper mood of devotional service, and that attraction to things material will keep us in the material world and will keep us suffering effectively. Right? So it's a test. Maya's test is to actually improve our bhakti. So she reveals to us where our, you know, where our weaknesses are, and then it's our responsibility then to ask the right questions, right? What did I do wrong? How can I improve? How can I do it better? Who can help me do it better? So they can analyse things and understand where my motivations are incorrect. What else is there? There's probably a few other questions. I'm on a weekly email list, and it's about asking questions, the right kind of questions. So that's what I saw yesterday came into my inbox. 5 questions that you can ask yourself when you make a mistake, right? And you know, our culture is based on questions, really, right? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena, right? Be humble. Like, oh, why am I suffering? I didn't do anything wrong. This is what everybody says, right? Every criminal in prison says, I didn't do it. I was framed. Right? Yeah, and as the police say, go and tell it to the judge. Right? So we can go to Meyer and say, I was framed. I didn't do it. Says, okay, no, but you deserve the punishment because you are guilty. Right? So we can learn from the testing of Maya. That's to improve our consciousness, to improve our bhava, our devotion to Krishna. And so we can ask these questions, you know, what did I do wrong? What was my motivation? How can I improve? Who can help me? Which devotees can help me? Like that. And so in that way then Krishna ensures that those who are in the spiritual world are actually pure devotees, right? Because that's the mood. If somebody comes in here and we had before she was kidnapped for the second time, her brothers came to the temple one morning for Mangal Aarti, right? And they came into the temple room wearing their shoes, right? Can you imagine? At Mangal Aarti, and started yelling and shouting and screaming at the devotees, threatening everybody. Then they ran off. Can you imagine how everybody would have felt? Huh? And there was a young girl, 18, 19-year-old girl who was homeless, and she was hanging around the temple at the time. She was sleeping outside the front fence out here. Right? And as they went past, they kicked her as well. Right? Kicked her and woke her up. But the devotees are shocked. You know, it's like, ooh. And the atmosphere was just shattered. Because, you know, we come from Mongolati. And we don't expect, you know, thugs with their hobnail boots coming into the temple room and disturbing everything. So Krishna doesn't want a disturbance in the spiritual world like that. Huh? So disturbing to the devotees and disturbing to Krishna's worship. So that's why he tests us beforehand. He doesn't want anybody coming in and making a disturbance. Make sense? Yeah. So that's why we're tested, because we're not pure. And even if you're a pure devotee, you'll still be tested. Huh? Or apparently tested. Well, that might be an indication that we're not very advanced, and so therefore we have to keep trying. Right? So what might happen? We could give up. Right? Too hard. I can't do it. But, you know, that's a sour grapes philosophy. Yeah, too hard. Yeah, it can't be worth it. Right? But we should never give up our faith in Krishna. Even if we can't make any spiritual progress in life, keep trying. Right? And Krishna reciprocates with us, even if we're fallen. He's Patita Pavana. Right? What is that song? Patita Pavana Hetu Tava Avatar. Mosamo Patita Prabhu Na Paibe A. Isn't it? Your mission is to save the most fallen. Tava Avatar. You've come down to save me. Or us. Why me? And I'm not the most... I'm struggling. So please help me. So Krishna will help us, and so long as he keeps us in the association of the devotees, even if we're fallen, keep doing a service, keep chanting Hare Krishna, and one day we'll get better. Huh? By the mercy of Prabhupada, the mercy of the devotees, mercy of Radha Balaba, we'll make some spiritual advancement. What do you reckon, Mahatma?
As you said, Srila Prabhupada established in Mayapur, Vrindavan, and he established new governor in Australia.
New governor? Yeah. New governor, it's also a nice place to be. Yeah.
Purity.
Yes, if you get a chance to have a holiday, go to New governor.
Purity.
But you'll come back to Radha Balaba. Right? You'll be back. The prasadam's better here. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
When Chintarip and I left Adelaide, my big concern was, is the prasadam going to be good enough? That's my big concern, prasadam. Then when we got here, we travelled overnight on a bus, and we got here, and the leftovers of the Sunday feast were still there, because most of the devotees went to Adelaide that weekend. And there were these trays of daiwada, you know, where they cook the what do we call them? Like the vada, was the lentils were cooked and soaked in yogurt and with tomato on top and stuff. Right? So when we got here, that was for breakfast. The leftovers of the Sunday feast were there. And we had this daiwada, and I thought, yeah, it looks like it's okay. big trays of.
What I meant is.
What you meant? Huh?
Prabhupada established Govardhan in Australia.
Yes, he did. Yep. He did. And quite amazing what the devotees are doing in New Govardhan at the moment. They're building a new high school, and if you've been to New Govardhan, and anybody who's been to New Govardhan and seen the school there, anyway, the school comes out on this kind of ridge that goes out towards the river, and down the side there's a valley. And if you visited New Govardhan, you know, 5 or 10 or even 15 or 20 years ago, you didn't know, you didn't see it. Just didn't see it. But now they've cleared all of that, and there's a hill comes down on the side. The ridge is here. There's another hill that comes down into the valley. And they've created 5 terraces upon which they're going to build. Spent $30,000, $40,000 just on building these terraces so they can put the buildings of the school up. And then behind the temple, there's another area there where there's a valley, but you wouldn't know it because there's so many trees growing there, you couldn't even see it. I thought it was just flat land that went up to the, up to the mountain, right? But there's actually a big valley there, and it goes around. And Ajit and Vanugopal have cleared all of that land now and burned all the trees, and it's just amazing now. They're planning to put... They've got the Krishna village where they have 40, 50 people living all of the time on the property. And they're living there as woofers and volunteers. And so they're growing so many vegetables. They got 15 acres at least under cultivation all the time. They just picked a crop, their ginger crop, 1.5 tons of ginger, right? And what's... We were discussing the other day, ginger is $20
a kilo.
A kilo at the moment, right? So, and a ginger rib is still cooking with some of the ginger, and it's fresh. It's amazing. So they're going to build more, and they've got accommodation there now, but they're going to build more accommodation, more kind of upmarket lodgings for visitors, and a yoga studio, and, just amazing how they're implementing Prabhupada's vision. People actually living on the land, growing their own food, and there's a waiting list of volunteers to go and live at New Govardhan. Huh? There's a waiting list. You can apply, and they may not let you in. Right? So people are waiting to be able to live on Krishna's farm and to work for Krishna. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Huh? That the Krishna village, what they call the Krishna village with the yoga, and they do yoga teacher training, and of course everybody's helping in the gardens. That turns over $600,000 a year now. $0.6 million. That's pretty far out. But when you think of the magnitude of the things that Prabhupada envisioned and the practical application of those ideas, have a guess what? You need big bucks. Huh? We discovered that. We want to have a kitchen. We want to have just a decent kitchen for Krishna. And what does it mean? We need money. Right? If you want to live, right? If you want to live, what do you need? Money. Why are we working so hard, right? But it's just amazing what the devotees are doing. Prabhupada's vision and how effectively Ajit and Venu and Vasusrestha and just the devotees are fulfilling Prabhupada's vision in a practical way. So yes, Prabhupada established New Govardhan. And it's, if you want to have a holiday from Radha Ballabha, then go and see Govardhanadhari. He's very beautiful. Very beautiful. But don't stay away for too long, okay? Okay, Gandharaj Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktabrinda Ki Jai.